Alice had been up alone for a couple of hours. In that early morning solitude, she drank green tea, read a little, and practiced yoga out on the lawn. Posed in downward dog, she filled her lungs with the delicious morning ocean air and luxuriated in the strange, almost painful pleasure of the stretch in her hamstrings and glutes. Out of the corner of her eye, she observed her left triceps engaged in holding her body in this position. Solid, sculpted, beautiful. Her whole body looked strong and beautiful. She was in the best physical shape of her life. Good food plus daily exercise equaled the strength in her flexed triceps muscles, the flexibility in her hips, her strong calves, and easy breathing during a 4-mile run. Then, of course, there was her mind. Unresponsive, disobedient, weakening. She took Aricept, Namenda, the mystery Amylyx trial pill, Lipitor, vitamin C and E, and baby aspirin. She consumed additional antioxidants in the form of blueberries, red wine, and dark chocolate. She drank green tea. She tried ginkgo biloba. She meditated and played numero. She brushed her teeth with her left non-dominant hand. She slept when she was tired. Yet none of these efforts seemed to add up to visible, measurable results. Maybe her cognitive capabilities would noticeably worsen if she subtracted the exercise, the Aricept, or the blueberries. Maybe, unopposed, her dementia would run amok. Maybe. But maybe all of these things didn't affect anything. She couldn't know, unless she went off her meds, eliminated chocolate and wine, and sat on her ass for the next month. This was not an experiment she was willing to conduct. She stepped into warrior pose. She exhaled and sank deeper into the lunge, accepting the discomfort and additional challenge to her concentration and stamina, determined to maintain the pose, determined to remain a warrior. John emerged from the kitchen, bedheaded and zombie-like, but dressed to run. "You want coffee first?" asked Alice. "No, let's just go. I'll have it when we get back." They ran 2 miles every morning along Main Street to the center of town and returned via the same route. John's body had grown noticeably leaner and defined, and he could run that distance easily now, but he didn't enjoy one second of it. He ran with her, resigned and uncomplaining, but with the same enthusiasm and zest he had for paying the bills or doing the laundry, and she loved him for it. She ran behind him, letting him set the pace, watching and listening to him like he was a gorgeous musical instrument. The pendulum-like swinging back of his elbows, the rhythmic, airy puffs of his exhales, the percussion of his sneakers on the sandy pavement. Then he spit, and she laughed. He didn't ask why. They were on their way back when she ran up beside him. But then, following his turn, they ran right at a fork onto Mill Road toward home, where she would have gone left. Alzheimer's did not like to be ignored. Back home, she thanked him, kissed him on his sweaty cheek, and then went straight and unshowered to Lydia, who was still in her pajamas and drinking coffee on the porch. Each morning, she and Lydia discussed whatever play Alice was reading over multigrain cereal with blueberries or a sesame bagel with cream cheese and coffee and tea. Alice's instinct had been right. She enjoyed reading plays infinitely more than reading novels or biographies, and talking over what she just read with Lydia, whether it was scene one, act one, or the entire play, proved a delightful and powerful way of reinforcing her memory of it. In analyzing scenes, character, and plot with Lydia, Alice saw the depths of her daughter's intellect, her rich understanding of human need and emotion and struggle. She saw Lydia, and she loved her. Today, they discussed a scene from Angels in America. They passed eager questions and answers back and forth, their conversation two-way, equal, fun. And because Alice didn't have to compete with John to complete her thoughts, she could take her time and not get left behind. "What was it like doing the scene with Malcolm?" Alice asked. Lydia stared at her as if the question blew her mind. "What? Didn't you and Malcolm perform the scene together in your class? You read my journal?" Alice's stomach hollowed out. She thought Lydia had told her about Malcolm. "Sweetie, I'm sorry. I can't believe you did that. You have no right." Lydia shoved her chair back and stormed off, leaving Alice alone at the table, stunned and queasy. A few minutes later, Alice heard the front door slam. "Don't worry, she'll calm down," said John. All morning she tried to do something else. She tried to clean, to garden, to read, but all she could manage to do effectively was worry. She worried she'd done something unforgivable. She worried she'd just lost the respect, trust, and love of the daughter she'd only begun to know. After lunch, Alice and John walked to Harding's Beach. Alice swam until her body felt too exhausted to feel anything else. The hollowed-out flip-flopping in her stomach gone, she returned to her beach chair, lay in the fully reclined position with her eyes closed, and meditated. She had read that regular meditation could increase cortical thickness and slow age-related cortical thinning. Lydia was already meditating every day, and when Alice had expressed an interest, Lydia taught her. Whether it helped to preserve her cortical thickness or not, Alice liked the time of quiet focus, how it so effectively hushed the cluttered noise and worry in her head. It literally gave her peace of mind. After about 20 minutes, she returned to a more wakeful state, relaxed, energized, and hot. She waded back into the ocean, just for a quick dip this time, exchanging sweat and heat for salt and cool. Back in her chair, she overheard a woman on the blanket next to them talking about the wonderful play she'd just seen at the Monomoy Theater. The hollowed-out flip-flopping surged back in. That evening, John grilled cheeseburgers, and Alice made a salad. Lydia didn't come home for dinner. "I'm sure rehearsal's just running a bit late," said John. "She hates me now." "She doesn't hate you." After dinner, Alice drank 2 more glasses of red wine, and John drank 3 more glasses of scotch with ice. Still no Lydia. After Alice added her evening dose of pills to her unsettled stomach, they sat on the couch together with a bowl of popcorn and a box of Milk Duds and watched King Lear. John woke her on the couch. The television was off and the house was dark. She must have fallen asleep before the movie ended. She didn't remember the ending anyway. He guided her up the stairs to their bedroom. She stood at the side of the bed, her hand over her disbelieving mouth, tears in her eyes, the worry expelled from her stomach and mind. Lydia's journal lay on her pillow.